Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in another week. If you're here, it means you like the show, you are one of our listeners, and I'm so grateful to have you guys aboard the Alarmist ship. Now, if you could please, please rate and review this show because it really helps us gain momentum and spread the word. That would be awesome if you could do that. Okay, let's get started because we have a super duper crazy disaster to talk about today, the Hindenburg disaster. Now, I have to be honest with you guys, I didn't know much about the Hindenburg. In fact, I hadn't really ever heard of it until my producer, Amanda, was like, you gotta check out the Hindenburg. It's super crazy. And I was like, what is she talking about? She kept saying, the humanity. I was like, oh my God. So I went online. I Googled Hindenburg. I didn't even know how to spell it. And lo and behold, it was a big one, guys. It was a real big one. And it also like made me realize my logo is the Hindenburg.
So, Rebecca, I have to ask, when I first sent you your show logo, I sent you a few options. What did you think that blimp was?
Well, I just thought, you know, old-timey, you know? I was like, oh, old-timey, history, of course. And blimps, you know, you don't really see them much out there. They must not be that safe. I'm also opposed to hot air balloons. So turns out my logo is based on an actual disaster. So kudos to the graphic designer and thanks so much. So let's get talking about the Hindenburg. In 1937, no airplane had been able to fly across the Atlantic Ocean without stopping. An ocean liner would have taken 2 weeks, But a trip on the German Zeppelin called Hindenburg would only have taken 3 days, and it would have been a luxurious affair. With sleeping cabins, dining rooms, lounges, a bar, and even showers. The Hindenburg made 10 round-trip voyages before its last flight on May 6, 1937. That day, Hindenburg caught fire as it attempted to dock at the Lakehurst Naval Station in New Jersey. As cameras and reporters watched on, the tail end of the ship burst into flames and caused it to crash. There were 36 fatalities, and to this day, no one has ever been able to explain for certain what caused the Hindenburg to explode. Theories abound, but one thing is for sure. This disaster marked the abrupt end to the giant and luxurious airship industry.
The ill-fated Hindenburg on her last flight sails over New York. These pictures, made from a Pathé news plane less than 4 hours before the tragedy, show the world's largest airship heading for Lakehurst, New Jersey. Over Newark's famous auto skyway, the airship was hailed by thousands who little dreamed it was their final glimpse of the Hindenburg.
And now, time for some fun facts, aka death stats. The Hindenburg was huge. It was 804 feet long, just 78.5 feet shorter than the Titanic. A one-way ticket on the airship cost $400. This was roughly the cost of a car in 1937. Out of the 97 people on board, 62 survived the disaster. Out of the 36 deaths, 13 were passengers, 22 were crew members, and one was a worker on the ground. Most of the people on the airship were German and American. It took 34 seconds for the entire ship to be engulfed in flames. Although there were cameramen from 4 newsreel teams and at least one spectator known to be filming the landing, as well as numerous photographers at the scene, no known footage or photograph exists of the moment the fire started. Oh, the humanity! You've probably heard Herbert Morrison's recorded radio eyewitness report from the landing field, but the disaster was not broadcast live on radio. It was broadcast the next day. The Hindenburg had a smoker's lounge. You could buy cigarettes and Cuban cigars on board. The room was pressurized to prevent hydrogen from entering. Now that's risky behavior.
And it's flames now, and the flame is rising to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the...
I know, super intense, right, guys?
Yes.
Well, for you listeners out there, I have a very special treat today. I have two of the best returning guests.
First, in your long, storied history of this podcast.
It's incredible. talking to you from the Erios Studios is Georgia and Stosh. Let's hear it.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hey,
Georgia. Hey, Rebecca.
So
happy to be here, Rebecca.
I'm honestly thrilled to be here. Yeah. I have told everyone I came in contact with today that I was going to be doing this.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And you have a lot of family members.
Oh, they're...
So
yeah.
That's really good.
I get asked about
podcast.
The alarmist minimum once a week, like maximum every day.
Maximum. Yeah. Okay, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really
good.
By
someone in my family or someone I know.
I mean, you're spreading the word as all of you should be.
It's not being talked about in my life as much.
What?
Not on purpose. I'm not going outside enough.
Yes.
And communicating to people other than my husband.
So since the last time you were here, Georgia, you went to Japan and you're still just as one would say anxious and Yeah.
You know when you're an idiot and you think that like going to a different place will change you in an instant.
Yes.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to learn.
Yeah.
That's really good to learn.
But I traveled all those 9,000 miles.
How yeah. far
is it? Yeah.
To learn that.
To learn that. I was like, oh, I'm still me and I'm still trapped in this now. Nightmare that is myself. This is great.
Trapped on the screen.
It was great. But I had a great time. Uh-huh. Lots of tears.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
I learned something about you before you went, which I didn't know this about the two of you, but you will only stay at a hotel that has a window that opens.
Yeah, this was part of why maybe I didn't have a great trip. The windows didn't open.
How did you sleep?
It was fine. Okay, well, the Japanese are great because they have a dual humidifier and air purifier in every room. And they were like, everybody has this at home. But I wasn't told what it was or how to use it until like far into
too many
my
panic
trip.
Attacks yeah. later.
But I just like a little fresh air. Like I don't like, I feel claustrophobic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Even when you come to my house, you're like, oh, let's open a window.
It's very rude. I
apologize.
No,
it's not rude. I get it. And I actually had a panic attack, a small panic attack. Don't get carried away. Okay. But
I got excited.
No. in Osaka, because I woke up in the middle of the night and the blackout curtains were drawn and it was
too completely dark.
And if I can't see a tiny bit of light when I'm sleeping, then I feel claustrophobic.
Sure.
Because
of monsters. And so I like ripped the window open and was like, yeah. And then was like, okay, it'll be fine. But it was also in Japan.
Yeah.
And this, you know, there are lots of small spaces there. And,
right. You just need some fresh air and.
Yeah. Well, but otherwise, it's amazing. Okay.
But I mean, I had my sound machine, of course.
Good.
So that got me through.
You survived.
I survived.
And now we're here.
And now we're back. We're here.
And we're ready to talk about the Hindenburg.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I came in very blind today.
Yeah. Tell me more.
I just don't know anything about the Hindenburg.
Me too. I didn't know anything until Amanda was like, you got to check out the Hindenburg.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's a widely known disaster that I've never talked about. So I don't know any details about it, but I just know that it was a big thing.
It was a big, yeah. The only thing I know about it is the pilot episode of one of my all-time favorite television shows, Timeless. On NBC, recently canceled.
Oh my God.
It's about time travel. So the facts I have on the Hindenburg are not facts because it's from a fictional show about time traveling. So I'm here to learn. I would love to learn more.
I mean, you're in for a real treat.
Yeah.
So now you guys know that I'm a huge fan of timelines, right? I love a schedule, an hour, minute by minute kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's super me. So I found this one on Wikipedia and a few other websites that I think will help us get an understanding of what happened before the Hindenburg crashed. The airship was scheduled to land on the morning of the 6th. And it was already running behind schedule because there were thunderstorms. So because of the poor weather, the captain, Max Pruss, charted across Manhattan. So I feel like they've shown this in movies where it's like everyone in Manhattan like runs outside and they see this blimp like going outside and like they're
humongous.
Waving. Yes, it's
Titanic
huge.
In the sky.
Exactly. So that happened. That was a real thing that happened. And then after they pass, they are heading toward New Jersey and it's 4 o'clock and Max Pruss, the captain, gets more news. They still need to kill more time. So they take a tour of the Jersey Shore, which I'm assuming in those times it was a different Jersey Shore.
Hopefully. They're the last thing all these poor people saw.
Different, but
yes,
a little the same.
That's a little dark.
Sorry, can I quick time out and question again? Where was this round trip flight from?
Oh, Germany. So
it did come all the way from
Germany.
Germany. So Germany to Manhattan to
leave
JFK, but oh wait, he wasn't.
JFK. Yeah. No, it didn't land at JFK.
Germany to JFK.
But we laughed. But the big thing was that it was going to take passengers to Lakehurst, and then they had contracted American Airlines because this was going to be a big thing of the future, and American Airlines was going to shuttle people from Lakehurst to Newark.
Ugh.
So this is.
That's
okay.
Yeah.
Go on, Stash.
So this took 3 days for them to get.
It took 3 days to get from Germany to
New York.
The coast. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And then they're kind of like shuttling around.
So they're doing the equivalent of like when the pilot's like, we can't land. We're gonna just do some circles around.
Exactly. Now imagine like 12 hours of that.
You've
already been on. I mean, if we're talking about claustrophobia.
No, 3 days on a. Here's the thing.
It's the Titanic, and there's only like, you know, 60 or something passengers.
I know.
So there's a lot of space, and they have like their own rooms. There's a shower.
Can you open a window?
I'm picturing the biggest hot air balloon of all time. Is that how this thing functioned? Like, is it like a little fire? That. Yeah, that's what I'm picturing.
I think it's made out of paper.
Think of a. Have you seen
it's
my
metal,
logo?
It's metal, right?
Yes.
Yes. No. I know. Yes. Okay.
we know what it looks like.
But is it made out of like aluminum foil? Like what is?
Okay. Well, we'll get into that.
That's so, I'm picturing something very flimsy.
Let's keep talking about this timeline.
I can't remember from that episode of Timeless. Sorry.
It's 6:22, ladies. It's 6:22 at night.
Okay.
And finally, the storms have passed and, you know, Prus gets word like, come on back. So around 7 o'clock local time, Hindenburg makes its final approach to the Lakehurst Naval Station. And it's getting in 7:09. The ship makes a sharp full speed left turn is what they say.
Hmm.
And because the ground crew is not ready. Which is insane to me because they've had half a day to prepare.
Also 3 days.
Inexcusable.
I knew this flight was coming in.
You know, whatever. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay. 7:11, it turns back, comes into the landing field. 7:17, the wind shifts direction and Prus is ordered another sharp turn. Okay. So he does another. Just so you know, a visual, the airship is kind of jostling.
Okay. But there's some bad turbulence on board.
I'm assuming. So it's 7:18 and they're finally going down and they start letting go of these they call them water ballasts. I'm definitely saying that wrong.
I mean, would it be an alarmist episode if you didn't mispronounce something?
Oh, there will be a lot of mispronunciation because there's a lot of German names on here. So the way that the blimp or the airship, the Zeppelin, we'll call it, comes down is that they have to drop water so that the... It can descend.
Something?
You want to call it descend?
Yeah.
So it's descending down. It's dropping water all over the place.
Wow. You'd think it would float up higher.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Yeah,
I think it would.
I don't know about.
But this is science or engineering.
This is science
something.
That we don't know.
Yeah.
So it's 7:25.
Well, do they know?
I mean, at 7:25, a few witnesses see the fabric flutter as if a gas was leaking. And then there's a blue flame. And then there's a fire in the back of the ship. And by 7:27, the whole ship was engulfed in flames. And the passengers and crew had only seconds to react. So some, unfortunately, jumped out of the windows, which I know is a common theme when you guys come here. Some fell. So since the Hindenburg was still 300 feet, it was like roughly like 30 stories in the air.
Oh, my God.
Many of these passengers, of course, didn't survive the fall. So that's kind of what happened. That's a step-by-step.
Okay.
How did they jump out of the windows? The windows opened?
Well, that was my question before, and Rebecca said, absolutely not, but now we know.
Okay, so I went to the library.
Thank God.
And, you know, fine. It's the Altadena Library. It's not the New York Library. They don't have everything.
So you have what looks like a thin magazine in front of you.
This was not even in the teen section. I had to go to the children's section. Okay? I have a little magazine inside the Hindenburg, and it has a lot of pictures, actually.
A giant cutaway book inside the Hindenburg.
Look, I'm going to show you a few pictures.
Okay.
Because it kind of tells you the journey of the Hindenburg through the eyes of a child. Okay. Again, this
hopefully
is
we'll understand.
Yeah. It really clarified a bunch of stuff for me. Okay.
Is this like bedtime reading?
What I don't understand is there something you notice about this photo is
that uncomfortable?
Makes you a little uncomfortable.
Is this a real photo?
Yeah, the giant swastika
It's not a real photo. It's a drawing, but
it's a drawing of something that happened.
So the Hindenburg went to Brazil in 1936, and it made those are the 10 round trip voyages from Germany to Brazil. And
why? Why Brazil?
I'm not sure why. Oh, because it was South America was a very popular.
Yeah, isn't that where all the Nazis escaped to South America?
They did go to Argentina, and Chile. The two main places.
Cool.
So yeah, we're looking at a rendering of the Hindenburg flying over Rio de Janeiro with swastikas on the fins or the wings. What is that?
Next to the
looks
Jesus
like a
fin.
Tails, the tail.
The
ends.
Tails.
That is what, ironically, the fire did happen very close to that, ironically.
Well, I think God knew what he was doing.
Exactly.
I don't believe in I don't know.
So, it was a very luxurious liner. You know, it had a dining room and it had a lounge. And, you know, this is a great book if you guys want to check it out from your children's section at your local library. But anyway, it was totally engulfed in flames.
This is also a drawing. This is very
exploded
dramatic.
Exploded in New Jersey. The Hindenburg that we're talking about have those swastikas on them?
It did.
Oh, that's...
So maybe
we upset?
I think this is a perfect segue into our who's to blame section.
The Nazis.
Now, there are, as I said before, no one knows exactly what happened. So there are a bunch of theories, right? One of them is the puncture theory. The puncture theory is where they thought maybe one of the metal wires that had the Zeppelin's like giant gas bags could have snapped, and maybe while it was making a sharp turn possibly during the landing, and then this wire could have made a hole in the gas cell, so it could have released hydrogen into the air, and hydrogen could have been mixed with oxygen, and well, that could have been ignited because of static electricity. From my reading of this, like, static electricity seems to be a big one.
You mean like that seems like the running theory, or the theory that has the most traction?
What I read was that the airship didn't really receive that much in routine inspections because even though there was evidence of it at least having some damage in previous flights, it is not known whether the damage was properly repaired or even whether all the failures had been found.
My God.
Okay, it's 1937.
I know.
But this is like the only one. They're not like sending the other.
The Hindenburg was designed to be inflated with helium. Now, helium, balloons, we all know helium. It helps us make funny voices.
Yep.
So the American government, which controlled the largest supply of helium, wouldn't sell it to any other country for fear that it would be used against them for military purposes. So like Zeppelins or on spy missions or like dropping bombs, you know, it's 1937. So the Germans use hydrogen gas instead, and hydrogen is incredibly flammable. This is why the hydrogen of it all is really important this disaster.
So it could be the United States.
Okay, let's put them up on the board. This to me was a shocker. I was going to hold it back, but I feel like it's important that we talk about hydrogen and helium.
Yeah, well, it's like something is designed to function with one type of gas, and then they're just like, well, we'll use this other one that's very dangerous, but, you know, it's going to be fine.
Which should be fine for 3 days.
You couldn't pay me enough money to get on one of these things, even if it was with helium.
Right. But, I mean, also, the passengers didn't know that they had switched up this helium hydrogen,
well,
I'm sure.
Did they? Okay, so here's the thing. Like I said before, there was a smoker's lounge, which had these doors that would, like, close. There was someone who was waiting, a crew member who was outside the smoker's lounge, and they check you or whatever, And you'd go in, they close the doors really fast so that the hydrogen wouldn't get into the smoker's lounge.
What? That is crazy.
Wait.
It's 1937.
The lengths that people would go to just smoke. They're like, I have to smoke. So I'm going to... I mean, I know everybody smoked then. It was like...
I mean, the solution is also just closing the doors really fast.
Yeah. Like we'll hire someone to just make sure the doors are shut really fast.
So what about... I know this is also fast, but maybe we put up the smoking industry, the tobacco industry.
Oh, yes.
Big tobacco?
Big tobacco. Yeah. I mean... They're,
why not? Why not put them on
I
the board?
I think we should put them up absolutely. On the board. If we're putting up the United States this early in the episode.
And you might say, I mean, some might argue the United States and big tobacco are connected.
One in the same. Well, that will be discussed.
That's a different.
We have the puncture theory, which is like they weren't ready for it, which caused it to get jostled. Also, they weren't sure that the routine inspections had been done, so...
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's one of the theories. There's also this lightning theory, which is a little bit more, you know, obvious. Like there was a storm.
Yeah.
Some people think a lightning could have struck.
And no one saw it?
Well, that's the thing.
Lightning struck and no one saw
the lightning, which I don't think we put lightning up on the board.
Mother Nature.
Yeah, Mother Nature. But that's the thing. No one really saw it, so...
But that's what's funny about that is that that's exactly what would happen today. This whole thing is actually reminding me a lot of another mystery that I'm obsessed with, which I've spoken to you guys about, which is the disappearance of Malaysia Flight 370.
Now that's one we have to do on this podcast.
I know. I was like, is it too soon? But no, you should really do it if you can.
We'll see. Except we'll give it some time.
Pretty much we know who's to blame at this point.
Yeah.
But that plane took a sharp left and a sharp left as well. So there's a lot of parallels here. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, interesting.
But... if this happened today, there would be some cuckoo on the internet who would be like, it was lightning. And everyone would be like, no, there's video footage. And
right.
Like, there's no lightning. And they'd still be like, there was lightning.
Well, that's what's crazy.
That's what's funny about this.
But the crazy part is that there were camera crews and there were people there that could have recorded it. But for some reason, they were just looking down. No one was recording. I'm telling you, go online. They have all of these videos posted. And it literally is... you can see someone holding a camera looking at the Hindenburg, and then for some reason it goes to the floor and then it comes back and it's already in flames.
That sounds like divine intervention.
Yes.
Are we starting to believe in God? By the end of this episode, we're all going to believe in God.
Or a government cover-up.
God, ghosts, aliens, all of it.
So that's another theory. I don't think we should put lightning up on the board because it's...
Well, that's like hard to... You know, you're not getting any satisfaction from blaming lightning.
I'm kind of also. With you on that. I think lightning is just... Not, it's just not responsible.
Okay. So let's talk about another theory. This is the incendiary paint theory. Wow. Yes, thank you. I said that word correctly. So, okay, this one's kind of interesting.
Good job, Rebecca. I didn't mean it like that.
This one's kind of interesting to me. Okay. So 1996, we still don't know what happened. And a retired NASA scientist, okay, someone who might know.
Sure.
Addison Bain, right? He starts investigating, and his whole theory is that the doping compound of the airship was the cause of the fire. So doping compound is like what they put, the paint or the silver paint that they put on the paper. Fabric.
The paper. That
yeah, what is it?
Fabric.
It's fabric. Okay. I still thought it was paper.
Airships are made of fabric. So
paper. Then why are you on one? Okay.
So
okay.
There, it makes it water. It's the silver paint, right? And it covers the whole thing. And it makes it waterproof. And it also shrinks it to fit more tightly around the frame.
Oh.
So the lacquer used... was a substance like varnish mixed with aluminum powder. Mm-hmm. So it's varnish mixed with aluminum powder.
Which
and this
sounds
is apparently
flammable.
Yeah.
An explosive combination.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. NASA was like, okay, that's crazy. That's what we also use for solid rocket fuel. So that's
God.
What we use in today's space shuttles, right? So the storm that evening might have left enough electricity in the air to produce the electric charge, which would have ignited the Zeppelin's highly flammable outer layer. So do we want to put up the outer the
paint
whoever
industry?
Painted, whoever decided
yes, the painter
to paint this outer layer?
But I think so.
I have a question.
Yes.
Was there a designer of this craft?
Yes. It feels like a designer or the manufacturer signing off on.
Well,
this flammable choice.
They're not stating any of it, but in all fairness, this Hugo Eckner guy, he's the one who owns the company, so he should have known what was up.
Yeah.
Hugo's definitely going up. Now, okay. The Bain thing, this Addison Bain thing, gets a little interesting. He got permission from the German government to search archives for the evidence that they had found, right, when they did all the investigations. And this was during the Nazi regime. So the German scientists concluded that the dope on the Hindenburg's fabric was the cause of the, fire. And then Bain interviewed the wife of the investigation's lead scientist. His name was Max Dyckman. And she stated that her husband had told her about the conclusion and instructed her to tell no one, presumably because it would embarrass the Nazi government. Additionally, Dyckman concluded that it was the poor conductivity, not the flammability of the doping compound, that led the ignition of hydrogen. This is what I've read. So I'm just getting a strong sense, a strong gut feeling that I feel like we should put the Nazi government up there.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that that was...
It's going to be hard not to blame the Nazis.
The Nazis should have been on the board before
the United
here.
States. Yeah. Yeah. So let's put if you could just find room above the United States to put
you know what?
The Nazis.
The United States deserves to be right at the top of the list.
And
right
while
now.
We're at it, let's put the Zeppelin company. Well, let's put Hugo Eckman.
Yes.
Wait, so the guy, I'm sorry, but the guy, the NASA scientist who is making these conclusions is working in the 80s?
In the 96, 90s. Yeah.
But the Max guy who also heard about this conclusion.
Yes.
Oh, he was still alive.
He was not alive at this time.
When did
he
did he hear? Oh, but how did he know that conclusion? And then also
he did the investigation in the 30s.
Oh, okay. So they came to the same conclusion. decades apart, but they kept it a secret because he didn't want to embarrass the Nazis.
Exactly. This, and again, this is just their professional opinion. There, I don't think there was, there's not a lot of evidence.
I'm just picturing the movie version of this, you know, where like the women on the Hindenburg, like as they're getting ready to land, are like, someone has like static cling on their dress and they're like, oh wow, there's a lot of electricity in
that's
the air.
That's a beautiful scene.
And then 20 maybe minutes later,
yeah, maybe a child has their little rabbit toy and
okay, well, we got a shock.
You know?
Oh, good We're talking about little this, Jimmy. But did you hand me the magazine? Okay, remember I told you that it was told through the eyes of a child?
Oh my God.
Okay, so I'm reading it and it's a girl. She's 16. Her name is Irene. And I'm like, oh, Irene is you know, on the Hindenburg. She's loving it. She's dining. She thinks she's a movie star because it's so luxurious. She's got two brothers and a mom and a dad. And they're taking this flight. And then she walks us through it. And then the fire starts and it's black. And she can't find her mom because of the smoke. And she finally, like, sees her brothers and they throw them out the window.
Oh, God.
And she, you know, she gets a little bit of fire. And that's where the magazine stops talking about Irene. Now, I looked up Irene because it was a real person on the Hindenburg. She died.
In the Hindenburg?
She died in the Hindenburg. She burned to death.
Oh, my God.
Which, to me, it's crazy that they're narrating this Hindenburg magazine from her perspective.
I think that's illegal.
And not tell, yeah.
I mean, probably. It's not their fault. I don't think we should blame the writers of this.
This is a different
magazine.
Episode. This is a different episode.
But I'm incensed, and that's not meant to be a pun. Okay, so we have the Nazis up there. We have the United States and the Big Tobacco. And I think we should also put the Zeppelin company, Hugo Ekman.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's
And I found the design team was led by Dr. Ludwig Dürr.
Ooh.
But that could all go under the Zeppelin umbrella. I'm just saying, because he designed all of the, he led all of the Zeppelins. He was the head designer on most of them.
Okay.
So we could just put the Zeppelin company.
I think we should do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he probably was the one who was like, we'll paint the silver.
Now, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but I want to kind of go back to the Nazi party because I just want to, we just started talking about the Nazis. And so, you know, my big rule is that I'm not doing the Holocaust on this show. That's my number one rule. But I mean, this is Nazi adjacent, right?
Yes.
So, we should all. There's a lot of Nazi ties with this Hindenburg disaster. So, the airship was used for Nazi propaganda. So it had this giant swastika prominently displayed on the fin, and the Nazis thought that the giant airship would be a good way of spreading their message and helped pay for the construction of the Hindenburg. Now they were essentially sponsors of the airship. This is why they were able to fly it over the 1936 Berlin Olympics. And they also often flew it over cities where, in what they called propaganda tours. And they'd throw down flags and pamphlets and would blare German patriotic tunes and like pro-Hitler announcements in these towns. So, and now we're going into the sabotage theories.
Okay.
One of the sabotage theories is that Hitler himself ordered the Hindenburg to be destroyed in retaliation for Eckner's anti-Nazi, or you call it anti? Now that's an English
word.
Will
allow.
Anti-Nazi opinions. So,
Hugo.
This is Hugo.
So Hugo had been vocally opposed to the
Nazi. It's complicated because he took the money from the Nazis to build it, but then had been vocally against them, and so they think, you know, it's possible Hitler, you know, hired someone to kill.
Was Hugo on the?
Hugo was not on, but it was, you know, a
failure.
It was
like right, represented Hugo. Him
exactly.
And if that thing goes down, it's gonna look really bad.
Yeah,
because it was really bad.
So that's a sabotage theory. Now, there's a bunch of these sabotage theories.
So do you want to put Hitler separately on the board? Or do you, think, want, or do you think he so, just so the Nazis are sufficient? Yeah. I'm asking.
There's no actual evidence that right. Hitler opened, you know.
This like, is more openly. Conspiracy side.
That's a bit more of the conspiracy. But, I mean, I'll always put Hitler up on the board.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about him, if he's not there.
Yeah. Let's put him up. If we want, we can.
It's kind of a double Nazi.
It's a double Nazi. Double. Yeah. But well-deserved.
Nazi.
So there's a bunch of these sabotage theories. Most of them are kind of led by the Zeppelin company owner, the commander of the naval station, which they landed on, and the Max Pruss, the commander of the Hindenburg.
So people who would want to
who don't want to take the blame themselves. Exactly.
They started a bunch They're of like, conspiracy oh, well, theories.
Yeah. So instead of it being something technical that we can like put our finger on, like, oh, it was
right.
the paint. It was the helium. It was the hydrogen. It was the this. Absolutely not. That yeah. couldn't have happened. It has to be some weird extra thing out of our control.
Yes, so there's this commander, Charles Rosendahl. He was the guy on the naval station, and he was a big, proponent of, like, the sabotage theory. And the Hugo Eckner, he mentioned the possibility of a shot as the cause of the disaster, so maybe, like, a gun going off inside the ship.
And I'm sure because you could bring guns on also.
They were allowed to bring guns on. They would be stowed. They would be taken away from them and then given back to them when they landed. Okay. And he thought there was a gun because there had been threatening letters that they had received. Uh-huh. So who knows?
I just feel like people here are scrambling for something that isn't there.
To me, the fact that they're trying to blame it on someone else means that these guys mm-hmm. should go up on the board. Because I don't trust them.
I don't trust them one I bit.
So I think agree. We should do Max Pruss, who's yeah. the captain. He's the guy who like also did those weird left turns.
Anyone who's making unexpected left turns for me now is very, yeah. very suspicious.
Stosh does not like a left turn.
Two sharp left turns in a direction you're not supposed to be flying. No, thank you.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to the magazine article that you're obsessed with about the Malaysian flight.
Yeah, it was in the Atlantic, and it's long and it's detailed. And if you have been paying attention at all, you're going to want to read it.
Okay. So Max P goes up.
Okay.
Or just on. Turn into the alarmist in a few weeks. Yeah.
Pruss.
For me, it's all about why it exploded when it did.
Right.
You know, it's like, why would it have been able to make all of these journeys, almost the entire flight, and then it gets, to New York, and it has to do all this vamping over the city or whatever, and all these, loops, and there's a word I'm looking for that I can't find. And then right before landing, so that's why I'm a little more intrigued by all of these
technical?
So, yeah, like the storm and the I don't know
like
what
you could been. or you could use that information to your advantage instead of it being just like conspiracy blah blah blah. It's like, okay, we know we've got this paint, we know we've got the smokers,
right?
We know we have like
yeah.
There's plenty of things which you could exploit to seems like quickly.
It's I mean, almost how did
this
easy.
Thing, yes. How did this thing even survive 3 days going across the Atlantic for it to only crash
right
at its landing site? Well, essentially?
There was the storm, which is a big factor.
I mean, but the idea that someone shot at it is much more salacious, and I wish that were true or something like that.
But if it's also just a storm thing, then why would they'll be like, it's probably clear sailing to Germany for 3 days, like, why would you even build something that would be susceptible to lightning? Or they just didn't care?
Well, I think everything, I mean, weren't planes at the time?
Or are they, oh God, or are they still?
Hindenburg had been hit by lightning before.
But it was, okay.
But I think it also had to do with, and again, I'm not a scientist, but the ropes that were thrown on the ground. Because this was another thing. It took about 200 people to dock it.
200
people. It just was not a very practical.
No,
this is like the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
But, it's so dumb.
But here's the thing: there were no nonstop flights. Right?
We're calling this a nonstop flight.
This is technically a nonstop flight.
That's true.
You could do 2 weeks on a boat, and we know about icebergs, right? Or, after the Titanic, I would have been like, I'm not going on
a boat.
Stay
on your continent.
I don't trust.
Yeah.
Although, I guess, but now that I'm thinking about it, everyone in America came on a boat. So.
Yeah. They all, yeah.
So, okay, fine. But, you know, you've got this hot new option of flying nonstop.
And if you're it's like the what's the fast plane? Oh my God.
What's the Concorde?
The Concorde. It's like the Concorde. And then that was like a whole thing.
It's the Concorde of 1937.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, rich people love to just, you know, like there's a bunch of people that have a lot of money now that can't wait to go to the moon. And I'm like, I will not be going to the moon. But. Yeah. But
also, I don't have $250,000
right,
to do it.
But if you had $250,000 to burn, would you go to the
moon? I'd give it to a girl like me.
And would a girl like you buy a ticket some brand new technology that could take you somewhere you've never been before?
I would
never tell anyone to buy a ticket to the moon. I mean, why would you want to be
the moon? There's nothing there.
Why would you want to be the guinea pig?
There's nothing there.
I also meant Mars when I said the moon.
Oh, okay. Still, there's nothing there. There's no restaurant. Like, it sounds like the worst vacation.
Do they have rosé there?
Yeah, dried. It's like a dry packet. Add your own water
to
your
rosé. It's very minerally.
Yeah, no thanks.
So there's a bunch of sabotage theories. There was one, which was this guy named Eric Spell, and he died in the fire. And he was named as one of the top saboteurs by this guy, Michael McDonald, who like wrote a book and did a movie about it, which apparently wasn't very good.
It's not the Michael McDonald, is it?
No.
The singer?
I don't think so.
Mike does a really good Michael McDonald. Okay.
It's better than what I just did.
So apparently Spell's girlfriend had communist beliefs and was anti-Nazi.
Good.
Right?
Oh, so but they think he... Was he one of the people that was helping... One of the 200 that had to dock?
No, he was a crew member.
He was on it. Okay.
Yeah. And so they might have been wanting to get rid of him.
So let's just get rid of everything? Or maybe something went wrong.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not seeing it on my notes, but I know there was like a... He was like a comedian, perhaps a German comedian on the ship.
Was he
and
like...
he had a dog. Okay. Oh. So I can't believe I didn't put this in my notes. I don't have his name in front of me.
Was he like the live entertainment?
No. Oh. He was just a passenger. And he had this dog that it was a German shepherd. Bull. You know? And he was bringing this German shepherd to America. Because
was it the first one?
A gift. Oh. Yeah, it was the first German shepherd.
Is this how America got German
shepherds? I think the German shepherd perished.
Well, yeah, that one didn't work out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they had to send another one probably a few years later.
On a boat. And he actually did survive from what I remember. And he was also... Oh, okay. So this was the thing. There was a dog on the ship. It's a 3-day flight. He was sneaking to the where they kept the luggage to feed the dog. Of course, because it needed to eat. And they talk about him actually in this magazine now that I got this information.
From the children. Is
he, you know, if
this
you
has
ever
been the best source.
If you ever need me to swing by the Silver Lake Library, just let me know.
No. I prefer the children's section in Altadena. Okay, here he is. Here's a photo of him walking, you know,
feed his dog.
Inside to feed the dog. And they think it's possible that he might have
messed with a lighter
or something like that.
Can I, real quick question. So they say, sure, bring your dog. He's going to be down in with the luggage, but you can't go down and feed him for 3 days.
Look, I don't know
fucking
about the
Nazis,
logistics.
You know,
I'm not
Nazis.
HR. I don't know about the HR department.
So that comedian's name, I just looked it up, is Joseph Spa.
Yeah.
And he's American.
Oh, actually.
No, no. He was born in Germany and then lived in America.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Right? And he also was an acrobat and a comedian. And as a child, he was a contortionist.
Fun guy.
Who knows what he was doing, you know?
Yep.
But apparently, his wife, when he got it, you know, whatever, when they announced that he was someone that they were thinking could have been a saboteur, he was very shocked. He was outside painting something in his house.
What kind of paint?
And it wasn't the silver paint. Yeah, it was weird. He was painting a canvas and lighting it on fire.
Just test driving.
So his wife came out and she was like, well, honey, it looks like they're thinking of you as a suspect. And he almost fell off his ladder.
Because it was so funny.
Wow.
Look, I believe a guy who's willing to fall, but now that you're saying he's an acrobat, I'm thinking we should put Spa up on the board.
Yeah, because should be able to, if he's not guilty, then he should be able to hold his balance.
Look, I think Spa's dead. That's so true. That's so true. Maybe it was because he got caught, not that he was shocked that he...
It's like, you know, the lady doth protest too much. Like, oh, me? I don't know.
It was a little too physical comedy for our taste.
Yes. Keep it together, clown.
The last thing I mean, good, we have Joseph. We've talked about Joseph Spa. And the last thing I just want to throw it up in there before I even ask you guys if there's anything you want to throw up on the board is karma.
Mm.
Is karma to blame?
Is this like pre-karma?
Well, do you mean like before the invention of karma?
No, like are you saying karma would be getting the Nazis?
Because this was pre...
Well, yeah. Look, I wrote down the definition of karma.
Okay,
sum of a person's actions in this and previous states of existence viewed as deciding their fate and future existences. So... the informal definition is good or bad luck.
Yeah, yeah.
Viewed resulting from one's actions.
Okay, so when you bring up karma,
yes.
Whose karma are you addressing?
Nazi karma.
Right. But so it's 1936.
Pre-Holocaust? Yes.
Sorry.
1937.
1937. The war was in the 40s, right?
Right.
The war was in the 40s. Yeah, this is pre...
So this is like almost pre-karma, like a little bit.
Well, the annexation of Austria, which Sound of Music,
yes,
happened in 1938.
Right. I'm not saying they're not already doing bad things.
They're doing bad things. But here's the thing. This is why I say karma. An airship with a giant swastika on it burns to the ground. Mm-hmm. Could that be karma?
It's a good image. It's
foreshadowing.
Yes.
I love
should we put foreshadowing up there?
I love your like out of left field last, like, let me throw this last thing on the board.
I mean, you got to.
Those are always super compelling for me. And I think karma is like a really interesting, you know, something to
option.
Point a finger at.
Yeah.
I love to point the finger at karma sometimes. So. In hopes that...
I mean,
do we know what the fallout was of this disaster? Like, what did it look like for the... did the Nazis suffer, you know, in the international...
Well, we all know how that ended,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But...
they, like, worked out pretty well for a minute.
How are the Nazis... Which,
you know, well, I have the little section at the end of the podcast that we talk about what happens after, but...
Okay.
But, I think we should talk about it now. Well, the hydrogen... the helium, the export of helium. So, like, these were the things that kind of happened. Americans were like, come on, guys, you got to give helium to other countries, right? We can't just let them be using hydrogen and letting them burn to the ground. And the other thing that happened was that, you know, the war ended. Well, before the war ended, so this kind of just stopped the airship industry.
Okay, good. Because it's stupid.
And it's kind of good, you know, it's good karma in the sense that it was going to be run by the Germans.
Yeah.
So we would have been, they would have been very successful at this, the way people travel, right? So this was bad, you know, it kind of sent off a signal. No one trusted airships anymore. And the aviation industry then kind of got going, because I guess there was a plane that went from California to the Philippines. Now, guys, it took 60 hours.
Oh, my God. Oh, my.
It took 60 hours. Oh, it was
good Lord.
Slow as hell. but it was a good proof of concept. And then after the war ended, then, like, the next year, there was 25 commercial airlines that were founded in 1945.
It is fascinating that this was not, like, relatively, this was not that long ago.
No, and also,
and why? Now I'm, like, complaining already. I'm like, oh, I have to take a two-hour flight to Vancouver tomorrow. It's going to be so annoying.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's 2:45.
Well.
And you're at taxi time. That's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what I want to talk about. Why does the Altadena Library not have more books about the thing that's the huge disaster that changed the course of aviation history?
You should write a letter to them.
Who could? Yeah, should we?
Should we put the Altadena, we put the Altadena
librarian?
I think that's a, that's like another, that's another talk about, like, the sad fall of public libraries.
Just a refresher. Do we feel good about all of these things that we have up on the board? I'll tell our listeners. We have the Nazis with an exclamation point, the United States, Big Tobacco, the Zeppelin Company, Hitler, Max Pruss, who was the captain, Joseph Spa, the contortionist, and karma, good old-fashioned karma.
Is Hugo a part of the Zeppelin? Hugo was the owner?
Is part of the, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. He's in the Zeppelin company. Is there anything you want to throw up there before we start kind of getting down to the nitty gritty?
No, I think this is a solid list.
This is a great list.
Okay.
I will say that, like, when I saw the picture of the Hindenburg with, and I know many people will be like, you should have known this because everybody knew that the Hindenburg was like a Nazi flying ship thing. But seeing the swastikas definitely, like, chipped away at my empathy a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
For the survivors?
Not for the survivors, per
or
se.
Or for the deaths?
Just for, like, the whole, I'm like, oh, like, not to see a Nazi, a symbolic, like, Nazi thing go up in flames and be ruined and then, like, just over makes me feel less bad.
Yeah. Here's one thing. They were going to call the Hindenburg the Hitler or something.
Ugh. So it would have been
so
dead
actually
either
been
way.
Amazing if yeah. the Hitler went up in flames.
That would have yeah. been maybe some better karma or, like, foreshadowing.
Yeah, or if it hadn't gone up in flames, yeah, but it would have never have lasted after the war anyway. It would have been like, oh, we can't fly these anymore.
You know, Hindenburg, like, was the president before Hitler, I'm pretty
well,
sure.
Well, that was smart of
and
Hitler.
So it was Eckner, the Hugo Eckner guy, who was like, I'm not calling it the Hitler, even though you're giving me all this money. I'm going to, and it was like a big F you to them. Yeah.
But
Eckner was kind
out.
Of a good guy, but that doesn't, just because you're a good person doesn't mean that you're not to blame.
Yeah. We all make mistakes.
For disasters. Yeah. Yeah.
He made a mistake.
Some of them larger than others.
So let's get to it. Who is to blame?
Almost, I feel like we can take Big Tobacco down. Is that...
okay, yeah, let's go with that gut feeling. I think it's okay to take Big Tobacco down.
I think that could have been a catalyst.
I mean, it's unsure if it was a cigarette that really...
Yes.
I think, yeah, Big Tobacco is off.
Okay, so again, to my point of, like, you knew how all of this stuff worked together and how it could go fantastically wrong.
Yes.
So, like, then why would you even like... have let people bring cigarettes on? Why did you even have a fucking smoking... I can swear on this, right? A smoking room where the doors have to, like, shut really fast. Like, you're just...
I think that there was no option for no smoking then. You know what I mean?
But then why are you building something that...
Imagine one
could...
without a bar. You would have been like,
oh my God,
I'm not going on the Hindenburg.
3 days.
Georgia, you have to spend 3 days in a flying paper airplane with no windows and no booze.
Ugh. Nightmare.
No.
But I think you're right. We can take off Big Tobacco.
I think we can also... I
don't think we can take off the United States yet.
I wasn't going to say United States. I was going to say Joseph Spa.
Spa, the contortionist. Although we just don't have the evidence.
We don't have enough. There's no. We don't, there's not so enough let's evidence.
Blame somebody else yeah. with the lack of evidence we have towards them. And,
there's not enough evidence to really, really solidly point the finger at him.
Yeah. Let's take Joseph's spa.
No, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
Which I know like, we don't have for anyone.
Like, but like maybe he did. Like maybe actually
look,
did
it's
it.
Possible. And if he did, he got away with it.
He truly did. Why would anyone do that to their own dog, though?
No, I don't think he did. He had a dog going. He didn't. I think I feel good about taking him off.
Okay.
Now, the Zeppelin company, I think we still got it. The Nazis is a bit of a sabotage theory. Nazis and Hitler. I blame them.
I know. But we can't really blame them for the disaster. We can blame them for... the, you know, maybe the Hindenburg. I mean, they funded it. They've helped fund it.
Yes. But
they probably didn't.
It's really hard
for me to say. They didn't design it. They didn't, like, choose the paint. They didn't probably make the decision to use hydrogen.
No, it was all they had. I mean, it was kind of a stupid decision. But we have to take them down.
Oh. Don't worry, we still have Hitler on the board.
No, he's coming down too.
Oh, what? Well,
Hitler and the Nazis are inextricably linked.
Yeah.
All right, this is a direct, then fine. Directly, Amanda's upset. They're not.
Yeah. Okay, let's hear it. I'm just saying, it would be one thing if the Nazi regime was saying, let's really take this air travel to the next level. Let's get some of these Zeppelins going. But they had already been doing it, right? Even before the Nazis took power. Is that correct?
I'm going to have to double check that. I'm sure one of our listeners out there already knows the answer.
Yeah. Because if someone's the Nazis writing. Were really proponents of this, I'd say that's a good argument to keep them up.
Well, they
there.
Were definitely big time proponents. So
I'll Google.
They 100% were big proponents.
Okay, so they're not off the board.
Okay,
quite
fine.
Yet.
They're not off the board. And
how much blame does the United States deserve for not giving helium?
They were on the defense, so they were like, we're not going to give them helium. And I mean, this podcast, it's the Alarmist. History repeats itself, huh?
U.S. sucks. I would like to give like at least a third of the blame to the United States.
No, I don't think we can blame
him. Can we blame him for something else?
Yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of things we can blame him for. But not now. Okay, so I'm going to cross off the United States as much as I want to.
So we're left with the Zeppelin company.
The Zeppelin. Max Pruss, again, is the captain.
But Captain was like, guys, I want to land. And they're like, not yet, Captain.
Yeah, it's not his fault. Yeah.
This doesn't feel like it's the captain.
No.
But I feel it's maybe more the Zeppelin company. And then if Hugo, because Hugo's like, all right, Hitler, I get your deal. I don't love it, but I will take your money. And then he's like, okay, maybe, you know what? Maybe this needs to be over and let's make Hitler look bad. So Max, what I need you to do is... XYZ.
Whoa. Wow, do we have a new conspiracy theory?
This is going to be all up on the internet.
Just hatched?
This makes
in
the
sunny
most
California?
Sense to me. This makes sense, which is very sad.
I was with you. I agree. Look, I think it's... I'm just going to say it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a combo. This might be a threefold for me.
Okay.
Of the United States.
No. Of the Zeppelin company?
Yes.
The Nazis?
Okay.
And karma.
I would love a dash of karma.
I think
in
you
the
put
blame.
A sprinkle of karma yeah. because they had it coming, as the song says.
Yep.
But they hadn't done the worst of it yet. Break into song.
Is that Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did we feel about that?
But it's are we calling karma pre-karma?
I would like to call it, yeah, I mean, I only mean pre-karma in the sense that it was like not, you know, the Nazis hadn't done the worst of what they were going to do yet.
Okay.
So it was like a little,
like,
oh.
We're worried.
I think we're watching.
Dirty.
Yeah. But we're like pre-karma.
I, trust me, I think the Nazis were already doing bad things.
Yes.
100%.
But the world didn't necessarily know about it, right?
I think people were onto it. Obviously, Eckner was onto it.
Eckner was onto
it. But Eckner was German.
Yeah,
but the U.S. didn't want to give him helium.
We're American,
so they knew something was up.
Yeah. And we don't like a lot of what's happening.
Maybe the United States actually deserves some credit because they were trying to prevent the Zeppelin from even flying. Or the Nazis from carrying out.
Yes.
To me, this is producer Amanda. The United States not giving them helium is one thing, but them deciding to fly despite not having helium and making the decision to use highly flammable hydrogen and still fly. That, I mean, is it like
that's their choice.
It's the Zeppelin company, guys.
Yeah. It's really the Zeppelin company.
It's the Zeppelin company.
I think sprinkled with a bit of karma.
Yeah, a little sprink.
And that to me feels good because the karma
a little
kind
dash of pre-karma.
Because the karma
you know when it's
insinuates
coming.
Yeah. the Nazi involvement.
Yes. Nazis are done?
Nazis are they out. So is Hitler.
It. Yeah.
That's tough.
It's tough.
It is.
It's really
it's hard sorry, to see guys. Go.
So the Zeppelin company with a dash of karma is going to the alarmist jail.
I feel good about our work.
Yeah, the Hindenburg, crazy disaster to learn about, especially knowing that my
logo's
all
about
it. So
will you guys go home tonight and watch that episode of Timeless that I was talking about?
I think everyone in America will be watching.
I hope everyone goes back and NBC brings it back for a third season.
Timeless they already bring
is
it back
one.
They brought
surge.
Back they brought back two final like season finales, which I have not even brought myself to watch because I don't want it to be over.
I'm Do so you only watch loss. Broadcast TV?
No.
No, she also watches cable.
Cable.
The Housewives.
I watch Bravo.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Cable.
I watch too. I watch old broadcast television on Netflix or Hulu.
Okay.
And that's what makes you a reliable source.
Exactly.
Guys, thank you so much for joining me today and really getting down to the bottom of who's to blame for the Hindenburg disaster.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
After the Hindenburg disaster, American public opinion favored the export of helium to Germany, and the law was amended to allow the helium export for non-military use. But after the German annexation of Austria in 1938, the Secretary of Interior refused to ink the final contract. After the disaster, aviation got a boost. Considered both safer and more economical than their air-filled predecessors, airplanes filled the industry gap. In November of 1935, a Pan Am China Clipper aircraft completed an 8,000-mile flight from Alameda, California, to Manila in the Philippines. The flight time was just under 60 hours, but it nevertheless was a strong proof of concept. Listeners, please chime in. Let us know who you think is to blame. Tell us all of your opinions on our website. That's thealarmistpodcast.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram or all of the other social media sites. We're at thealarmist. Email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week as we figure out who's to blame for the beheading of Anne Boleyn. That's right, Royal Watchers. We're going to be talking some major royal drama.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.